Stop 5, the monster meeting site. From the Garfield Water Wheel, return to Chewton. Turn left at the Pyrenees Highway and travel through the town, passing the Town Hall and the Red Hill Hotel. After 1.1 kilometres, turn left into Golden Point Road. The clearing and the Monster Meeting Monument is on the left-hand side, 200 metres further on. Watch out for the sign to your left. So pause this now and restart when you arrive. You should now be in a very ordinary-looking paddock beside the Golden Point Road. But like many unremarkable spots, this is where a momentous event took place when 14,000 diggers attended what's called the Monster Meeting on December the 15th, 1851. This enthusiastic crowd is a 2008 recreation of the spirit of the Monster Meeting, with lots of artistic license and some chanting from recent times rather than the real meeting in 1851. The gold rush at Forest Creek was then 3 months old, and there were 25,000 diggers camped along Forest Creek, upstream and downstream from where you stand. I asked Robert Anea to set the scene.
The focal point was the shepherd's hut. Now, the shepherd's hut would not necessarily have been on the hill. In fact, it probably would have been closer to the creek. So it's somewhere around about where we are and around about where this monument is. But given that so many people attended the meeting kind of would have spread all around us here, back up on the hill. People would have got up there to have a good view, to have seen everything and everyone that was arriving. But, yeah, this was the spot.
The diggers met under their new flag, upon which was a bundle of sticks tied together as a symbol of unity, a pick and a shovel for their labour, the scales of justice, and in the fourth corner, a kangaroo and an emu, the symbol of the diggers' identification with their new land, and also two animals who cannot take a backward step. The diggers were angry over attacks, a gold licence tax imposed by Governor Latrobe. Once the rush was unstoppable, the government had sought control by making the search for gold subject to a licence.
And that licence fee was 30 shillings a month. So £1 was 20 shillings, £1 sterling. So £1.5 sterling was the cost of a monthly licence fee. And that was an unbelievable amount of money. That was like paying hundreds of dollars, you know, like paying your annual council rates once a month these days.
But in spite of the tax, people kept arriving on the diggings. As mentioned earlier, by December 1851, 3 months into the Forest Creek rush, there were 25,000 diggers camped on the creek, upstream and downstream from where you now stand. So Governor Latrobe, in a desperate bid to persuade potential diggers to stay home and work, doubled the licence fee from 30 to 60 shillings a month. Here again is Robin Anea.
The reason he came up with this idea was because he wanted people to stop going to the diggings. As simple as that, really. Now, why, when people were paying all this money into the coffers? Because Melbourne was being bled of its public servants. It was certainly hard to get police and people to work at the post office and labourers to work on the streets and any ordinary job you could think of. But also there was a feeling that they were their own bosses, and they were. And this was one of the celebratory things about being a digger, was they were their own bosses. They weren't under the thumb. So the idea was that Governor Latrobe would bring the diggers to heel by doubling the price of the licence. And it didn't work that way because people jacked up and they said, no, not only will we not go back to that life and abandon our free, adventurous life, but we won't pay. We won't pay that doubled licence fee and you can't make us. And that was what sparked the monster meeting, that sensation. Will ye be slaves? Was the kind of line that was put about in the advertisements that were hammered to trees in these parts. Will ye be slaves or will ye be men?
The intelligence has just arrived of government to double the licence fee. Will you tamely submit to the imposition or assert your rights like men?
We will!
You are called upon to pay a tax imposed by your legislators for the purpose of detaining you in their workshops, in their stable yards, and by the flocks and herds. They would increase this sevenfold, but they are afraid. Fie upon such pusillanimity, and shame upon the men who, to save a few pounds for their own pockets, would tax the labour of poor men's hands. But remember that union is strength, that though the single twig may be bent or broken, a bundle of them tied together yields not nor breaks. Ye of Britons, will you submit to oppression and injustice? Meet, agitate, be unanimous, and if there is justice in the land, they must abolish the imposition. The Victorian government builds no bridges and makes no roads. They have one single idea, taxation, and all they can get. Will you be ridden over with an iron hand to please the wishes of the squatters or any other class? Will you tamely submit to have your hard earnings torn from your grasp to enrich the pockets of a few? Or will you come forward like men and maintain your rights?
That speaker at the Munster meeting was Lawrence Potts, and it was possibly he who called the meeting. And although Governor Latrobe certainly was not there in 1851, we thought we'd bring him to our gathering in 2008. His middle name was Joseph.
That the successful prosecution of the search for gold will bring thousands and thousands to our shores and operate an unforeseen but immediate change in the whole structure of society is undoubted. And the maintenance of the character of the colony as a British possession, offering a suitable home not only to the poor, indigent or restless, and for the sober and enlightened middle classes depends in a great measure upon the power of the executive to assist good order and maintain respect for laws, in the absence of which no really respectable person would wish to make it his dwelling place. However great the natural advantages, and your tax is required for administration of the goldfields.
How did the government collect the licence fee?
The government, to collect the licence fee, sent out officials, of course, to every goldfield, and they formed a kind of fortified camp of a gold commissioner and assistant commissioners, and under him a whole bunch of police. It wasn't easy to find those police because Victoria's police force was cleaned out the moment gold was discovered. The police deserted and headed off to the diggings to try and make their fortunes. But more police were recruited, but it got harder and harder, and I get the impression that shadier and shadier characters were drawn to the police force because there were kickbacks to be had through allowing people to get away with selling sly grog and so on. So there was more money than just your police wages to be made.
They were also on a cut of the £5 fines for any digger who didn't have his licence. That's tantamount, it seems to me, to the ticket inspectors on our public transport today being armed and on a cut of the take.
The troopers, it's true, were any fines that were exacted from diggers for whatever, for not having a licence or for being booked for selling sly grog or whatever, the police would get a cut off. And they would even go out on what they called digger hunts all around the diggings on horseback, saying, "Show us your licences." And the diggers would have to climb up from their holes and dig their muddy hands into their muddy strides and find their licence and present it. And it had to show that they were licensed for the current month to dig for gold, that they'd paid this hefty 30 shillings. And if they didn't have the licence on them, and, you know, they were digging in water half the time, they didn't want to lose their gold licence. They didn't want the writing to wash off it. They didn't want to destroy this valuable document, but they had to have it on them at all times. If they didn't, they could be lashed to a rope behind the horse and dragged along with others like them back to the lockup at the camp and kept in custody until somebody bailed them out, effectively, or until they were taken before the court the next day and charged, I don't know, some extraordinary amount of money, £5 or, and that fine grew the number of times you were booked for not having your licence. But it was seen as sport, this idea of calling it a digger hunt. It was seen as sport by the officials at the camp to round up diggers who didn't have their licences. And many didn't, because until they found gold, a lot of them couldn't afford it. When important people came visiting the diggings, as they would, there were important lords and so on who would come on grand tours, which now included the Antipodes and the diggings, and they would arrive in Melbourne and they would be given an introduction in writing from perhaps Governor La Trobe to the commissioner at the Mount Alexander camp, and he would take them out personally on a digger hunt, and these lords and these dignitaries would write about the excitement of going out on a digger hunt, much as they might going out on a fox hunt or hunting some other sort of game. And there was also the resentment against the government that here they were getting this exorbitant £30 a month from every digger. Not only was the government getting this, but what were the diggers getting for it? This was the question they were asking more and more. What were we getting for it? Where are the fine roads that should be being made to lead us to the diggings? And where are the bridges to ford the creeks, which in the wintertime washed the road away and all upon it? There were no fine roads and there were no bridges being built, at least not that most diggers could perceive.
There is now a surplus of £13,000. Which has been screwed out of the sinews of the gold diggers. And what is to be done with it? They say it's for the Queen. Has the Queen not got enough? Or does she want to buy pinafores for the children?
The Home Government do not require, nor do they possess, the power to enforce unjust taxation. It was such a taxation that cost Great Britain America. There are few here who would advocate separation. Few who do not love the country of their adoption. Few who do not feel themselves free. And none, I trust, who will be slaves. Three cheers for Lawrence Potts. Hip, hip. Cheers for the diggers and our wives. And for Governor La Trobe, the Traps, and the Melbourne Herald, the newspaper who called us the scum of the country.
What did it achieve?
As a result of this meeting here, La Trobe changed his mind and he backtracked almost straight away as a result of this meeting. He saw and he heard from his officials who were obviously on the outskirts of the crowd. He saw and heard what he was up against in the form of the digger. He knew they were adventurers. He knew that they wouldn't obey the rules. He suddenly realised that there was no going back. His new colony was on this course and the diggers weren't going to come back and do their jobs. The licence fee never doubled to £3. So the diggers triumphed.
The single twig may be bent or broken, but a bundle together yields not nor breaks. We diggers united can never be defeated. We diggers united can never be defeated.
But the problems did not end with the monster meeting. The bad blood between the diggers and the government flowed on to Bendigo and became the Red Ribbon Agitation. We tell that story in the Bendigo Town Tour and of how the Monster Meeting and the Red Ribbon Agitation became the Eureka Stockade at Ballarat, where 6 police and 35 diggers lost their lives on the 3rd of December 1854, 3 years after the Monster Meeting. After Eureka, the despised licence fee was abolished, to be replaced by the miner's right of £1 a year. This entitled a digger to look for gold, hold a plot of land, and to vote. 3 years later, the vote was extended to all white men, the first such franchise in the British Empire. But it was another 50 years before women got the vote, and another century before the vote was extended to Aboriginals. And you can see the digger's flag. It'll be flying on the flagpole 200 metres back on the corner of Golden Point Road and the Pyrenees Highway, with its emu, kangaroo, scales of justice, pick and shovel, and a bundle of sticks. And that marks the end of The Rush, section 1 of this diggings tour. So if you're leaving us at this moment, I hope you've enjoyed the tour and come back another day to meet the characters and hear the Chinese and the Jara story. For those going on, our next stop is stop 6. It's a working mine, the Wattle Gully Mine. The directions are at the start of track 6.